Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening once again to the Hour of the Time. And tonight it's really going to be an Hour of the Time because we're going to straighten some things out here. We've got to do that. So tonight, since so many of you, insist upon needing some kind of a daddy, I'm going to try to fulfill that role for you just a little bit. I don't really want to be your daddy. I don't want you to need a daddy. I don't need a daddy. But sometimes, folks, somebody has to clarify things. And last night's broadcast brought home to me that there is a real need to clarify a lot of things. And so I'm going to try to do that for you. I'm here for you tonight. I'm going to try to blow a path through the fog so that the headlights can shine down the road and you can see what's really there. I'm going to try to part the veil. I'm going to try to pull some cobwebs out from between some of your ears. Because, you know, last night just absolutely infuriated me. And after I calmed down and thought about it for a while, there just seems to be this conception that that if you do this, this, or this, somehow everything magically is going to be all right, and you're not going to take any risk, and you're not going to suffer, and you know, if you prepare and all this kind of stuff, you're going to survive whatever comes. And I just got one question for you: what the hell for? Tonight I'm yours. Hit me, kick me, beat me, love me, I don't care. We're going to straighten some things out tonight.
If you want to love her, I'll do anything you ask me to. If you want another kind of love, I'll wear my leather mask for you. If you want a partner, take my hand. Or if you want to strike me down in anger, here I stand. I'm your man. If you want a boxer, I will step into the ring for you. If you want a Jewish doctor, all on the cover, here I am. If you want to drive a clown, or if you want to take me for a ride, well, you know you can. I'm your man. Yeah, the moon's too bright on the chain, too tired on the beach, won't go to sleep. I've been running through all these promises to you that I made that I could not keep. But a man never got a woman back, not by begging on his knees. But I told you, baby. bathing and fall at your feet. And I howl at your beauty like a dog in heat. And I claw at your heart and I tear at your sheet. I say, please, tell me your name.
Ladies and gentlemen, when I was a boy, I was an extremely sensitive young man and very willful. I wanted to do something good. I've always wanted that. I've always had this need inside me for some reason or other. I cannot explain why. To do something. To do something that really matters. I can remember the first time I ever got in a fist fight. I was scared to death. In fact, I was almost petrified to the point of cowardice, to tell you the truth. And the boy I had to fight was a bigger boy. About twice my age, as a matter of fact. And he was the base bully. We lived on a military base in the Azores Islands called Lodges Field. Actually, we didn't live on Lodges Field. We lived in a village called Fonte de Bastard, which was quite some distance from the base. And one day, we went to the base, and my parents dropped us, the children, off to play with some of our friends while they went to do other things. Well, when they came back, they parked the car and watched us for a little while. And that's when this bully decided to pick on me. To pick on me. And I was afraid of him. All of the children were afraid of him. That's how he got to be a bully for so long. And he hit me in the face with his fist a couple of times. And I didn't do anything. I didn't hit him back because I was afraid. My father saw this and knew that if he didn't do something right then, that I might turn out to be a coward for the rest of my life. So he got out of the car, he came over and he knelt down beside me and he says, "Son, you've got to fight him." I said, "Why?" He said, "Because he hit you, son, and you can't let him get away with that, because if he knows he can get away with it, he will always pick on you and hit you and hurt you." And I told my father I was afraid. And he said, "That's good, son, because you'll watch out for yourself if you're afraid. Now you go over there and you hit him back as hard as you can with your fist. And if he hits you, you hit him back again, you keep hitting him until he stops." And so I mustered up what little courage I had, and I was shaking like a leaf, 7 years old. Walked over to this big bully who was taller than me. I could not hit him in the face if I tried. And I hit him as hard as I could, just as hard as I could, ladies and gentlemen, in the chest with my fist, or as close to his chest as I could get. And he hit me back and knocked me down, and it hurt, and my ears were ringing. But I became numb. Numb. It hit me so hard it numbed me. And I got up and I started hitting him as hard as I could, crying. Tears just streaming down my face, and I was crying and hitting him and swinging, and I knocked him down. I knocked him down. I actually knocked him down. I couldn't believe it. And I got up on top of him and I just started hitting him again and hitting him again, and he was hitting me back. And then my father came over and picked me up, gave me a big hug and said, "You did fine, son. Go get in the car." So I went and got in the car with my mom and my little brother and sister, who were all sitting there with their mouths open looking at me as if I had done something extraordinary. And my father had a couple of words with the local bully. I have no idea what my father told him, but he never bothered me again. And folks, to this day, I don't believe it was because I knocked him down. But I got to tell you, I felt good. I felt better than I had ever felt in my entire life. I felt like the king of the world. Not because I had hurt someone, but because I had done something right in the eyes of my father and my brother and sister and my mother and all the other little children who were there, whom this bully had always picked on like ever since we could remember. After that, he didn't pick on too many of the children. Not just me, but anybody. I remember it like it was yesterday. I've never forgotten it. And then a little girl who lived on the base, next time we came to visit, and I think the next time we came to visit, it was because we had finally got some base housing so we could move from the village of Fonte de Bastard onto the base. And that would be much better for my father, who had to make the long drive twice a day. This little girl, her name was Glenna Jean Stowe. I'll never forget her either. She came and told me that I had really done something good and wanted me to come and play with her. And folks, 7 years old, you're not thinking about dating and sex and all of that kind of thing. I was just extremely pleased, and she was a pretty nice little girl. And we got to be really good friends. When I left the Azores, I never saw her for quite a few years until my father was stationed in Japan, and I went to Narumasu High School, and there she was. She had grown up, and I didn't recognize her. Not at all. All I knew is, this girl is beautiful, absolutely raving beauty. But she remembered me, and she remembered me because I had fought the bully, and the bully had stopped picking up on her and all the other children. She had never forgotten that either. Now, we never became romantically involved, but we were good friends for many, many years. I don't know what's happened to her now. I don't know where she is. That's what happens when you grow up in a military family, when you're reared on military bases and in foreign countries all around the world. You are left without a hometown. You see, that's one thing that most of you have that I can never have in my entire life. A hometown. All of the schools that I attended are gone now. They don't exist anymore. All of the children that I attended school with all the way through my high school graduation are scattered to the four corners of the earth. And I have only been able to locate a very few of them. Some from Narumasu High School, which was at Grand Heights Housing Center, near a little Japanese village called Narumasu, on the express line several miles from Tokyo. And I attended Narumasu for my freshman and sophomore year. And then we moved to Tachikawa Air Force Base, outside of Tachikawa City. And I bused every day to Yamato High School. And that's where I graduated in 1961. All my life, ladies and gentlemen, I have envied those of you who have a hometown. I would love to have some place that I could go back to and walk down the street and say, Mrs. Jones used to live over there. She taught me in the fourth grade. And there's old Jimmy Barnes. Boy, we used to play football together. And out there, there used to be a big field there where those houses are. And we used to build forts and play cowboys and Indians. I can't do that. I envy those of you who can. It's been a big, empty spot in my heart. Because everybody needs, at some point in their life, to go back and examine their roots, look at their beginnings, see their old friends, and yes, even their old enemies and teachers and antagonists and protagonists and the guys you played football with, the guys you played hooky with, and the guys you hung out with, and the girls you dated. Not to do it all over again, but just to know that it really happened, and to know that they're really there, so that you can have a feeling of belonging, so that you can be a part of your own past. I can't do that. I don't even have my old yearbooks. I don't know what happened to them over the years. They just disappeared, floated away. They're gone. Gone. I miss them terribly. And so to make up for that empty spot in my heart, I encompass this whole great nation as my home. I reached out and I wrapped my arms around this country, around the Constitution for the United States of America, around all of the principles and ideals for which it stands. I studied its beginnings, its history. I have researched its present. And that has become my home. Hometown, to be more exact. My home is here, with my family, on top of this mountain in Arizona. But my hometown is the country, the nation. I have determined and set out to do all of the things that my father told me he represented and was doing and didn't. The World War II generation that let us down, that sucked up to the tit of big government after the war was over to get their piece of the big pie. Trying as hard as I can to make up for that. Now, along the way, I've become well-versed in the methods and the manners of the beast, which has subverted from within and taken over my hometown. Taken it over. Is destroying it. I don't like it. And I want to do something about it. You see, because I want my children to grow up in my hometown free, with opportunity, without fear, especially without fear of their government. I am not anti-government. I have never been anti-government. In my quest to fulfill this, my initial plan was to serve in each of the armed forces, all four of them, retire, and go into civil service. That was my plan. I served 4 years in the United States Air Force, 10 years. A little over 10 years, about 11 years in the United States Navy. My next stop was the United States Marines. After that, I plan to finish up in the United States Army. Somewhere along the line, I discovered what was really happening. Actually, it's not somewhere along the line. I can pinpoint the exact place, the exact day, the exact year, the exact hour, as a matter of fact. When I made a tremendous mistake. Some people call it a tremendous stroke of luck because I never would have known or found out what I discovered and would still be serving what I thought was my country, as so many people are still doing, in their innocence, as I was innocent. I was sent from sea duty to shore duty to Fleet Admin Unit at Singpak Fleet, which is the Commander-in-Chief of the Pacific Fleet's headquarters in Makalapa, Hawaii. And they handed me this huge stack of papers and said, fill these out. You can't work here unless you have a top secret Q clearance. I was a second class petty officer at that time. And I filled everything out and I came to this long list of organizations. And you were supposed to check every organization that you'd ever belonged to in your life. And one was missing. It was the Order of Demolay, which is the youth organization for Freemasonry. And so, knowing that it was the youth organization for Freemasonry, I checked Freemasonry. Because Demolay was not listed. And wham, bang, crash, zippity-doo-dah. This automatically opened up an FBI record on me, because it's the FBI. See, most security clearances up through secret are agency checks, which means they just run a communications check of all the different agencies to see if they have any derogatory information. And if they don't, you can get as high as secret security clearance. Or you could then, let me put it that way. But to get top secret, and especially a Q, SCI clearance, which is what I had to have. SCI means sensitive compartmentalized information. The FBI has to do a complete background check, and ladies and gentlemen, they do not do it by phone. They literally, personally visit every single person that you ever knew in your entire life and ask them questions, the answers to which you would not want your mother to know. So I was kind of sweating that because I didn't know what could prevent you from getting a security clearance. And I passed it all. I got some strange phone calls from people that I knew wanting to know what bank I had robbed, why the FBI had been at their house asking all those questions. And I got the security clearance. Later, I found out that everybody who had my type of clearance, a top secret Q clearance with an SCI, were all members of the Mormon Church, the Order of Freemasonry, the Ancient Order of the Rose and Cross, or Rosi Cruci, and several other different secret societies, and most of them were members of several of those. Later, I discovered that those who belonged to the Mormon Church never went much higher than that, and you never saw them in the highest ranks of the military. And so I asked somebody once, and he told me, well, don't discuss it with any of them, but you see, their church teaches them to be obedient and never reveal secrets. And so we use them. He was confiding in me because he thought that I understood what was going on. I didn't. I didn't understand a lot of things that I was seeing. I didn't understand a lot of the things that happened. And I didn't understand the restrictions placed upon us when Americans were in peril and we should have been going to rescue them. but were forbidden to do it. I didn't realize what was going on until years later when I began to put all the information that I had seen and heard together and realized that I had actually been a part of and had seen the plan to destroy the United States of America from within and bring about a one-world totalitarian socialist one-world government over the ashes of the Constitution for the United States of America, and that it was the stated and avowed policy of the United States government to do that. When I realized that, I left the Navy. I took an honorable discharge as a petty officer first class, and I left the Navy. I never wanted to be a part of government service again because I knew what government service really meant. And I began a program of research and revelation and education to the American people, which I have not stopped since. Because somebody's trying to destroy my hometown. The only hometown that I have, the only one that I ever will have, the only one that can possibly mean anything to me because there isn't any other place for me to go. And ladies and gentlemen, if you've never seen anyone in your life who loves their children completely and totally with all their heart and soul, you come and visit me and you will see that person standing right here in front of you. And so I cannot leave my children to the future that I know is coming without putting up a good fight to stop it. No matter what happens in the future, I want them to be able to say, my father did everything he possibly could as a human being to leave us a good future. I'd be very pleased if many of you and your children could say that about me also. I don't want statues or ribbons or medals or anything like that. I don't even want to fight another war. I fought a war in Vietnam. There are no heroes in war. There are people who do what they have to do at a particular time when it is necessary because there just isn't anybody else to do it, and that's all there is to it. When I fought in Vietnam, I was a patrol boat captain. First, on the river and harbor at Da Nang, and then on the Qua Viet River near the DMZ. I saw an awful lot of combat. Me and my crew killed an awful lot of what we then called the enemy. And they killed a lot of us. And I worked with some damn good people. All of them boys. I was 25 and they looked up at me as some kind of an old veteran. An old salt. At 25 years old, I had a patrol boat with enough weapons that I could decide the life or death of anybody that we came across at any time that I wanted to, and could destroy whole areas of population. And if the weapons on my boat were not good enough, I could go to my radio and call in an airstrike or an artillery strike if I wanted to. And my crew were just young boys, 18, 19, 20 years old. My whole life became taking care of those boys. I never slept when I was on patrol. And I only allowed one man on my crew to take a cat nap if he actually really needed it than I knew when they needed it. None of my men ever showed up for patrol high or intoxicated or drunk or even with anything on their breath. I didn't care, nor did I go looking to see what they did when we were not on patrol, because I knew that they could all be dead the next morning. And whatever they were doing, I didn't consider to be any of my business, except when they reported to the boat to once again go out on that river. And we only patrolled at night, ladies and gentlemen. And before we obtained starlight scopes, you have no conception of what fear and darkness really means. You can't even imagine it unless you've been there. And I know that some of you have. You are my brothers. I never ate until they had eaten, and I never went to bed until I knew that they had a warm bed to sleep in. When we came in off of patrol, if some of them wanted to go over to the enlisted men's club and have a few beers, I always went with them and I always bought the first round and then I left them alone. If I knew one of my men was broke, I gave him money, as much as I could spare. And I was so happy and so thankful that no man that ever served on that boat with me was ever wounded or killed. I thank God for that even today. That's a heavy responsibility to put upon the shoulders of a 25-year-old man. Young man. And if you want to know the truth, 25 is still a boy. Now that I look back on it, now that I'm 54 years old, I can tell you that when I was 25, I was just a boy too. Trying to do what I thought was right, and I'm trying to do what I think is right today. And this is where we have to come to some understanding, ladies and gentlemen. Because I can't help you if you're deceiving yourself. If you're tuning into this broadcast because it gives you some kind of thrill, or it's entertainment, or you enjoy these programs, even though I am telling you things that should make you very sad about what's happening in this country and should be stimulating you to some kind of action, I don't see much action going on. And I hear people playing children's games. To be a patriot, ladies and gentlemen, is not to be loyal to my country, right or wrong. Do you understand what I'm saying? To be a patriot is to be loyal to the principles and ideals and to the supreme law of the land which makes the country. And if there's someone in the government, in the country, who is doing wrong things in the name of the country, you cannot support it. You cannot support it. The nation is not geographical boundaries. It is an idea. This is something that I realized many years ago has nothing to do with geographical boundaries. It has nothing to do with the border between the United States and Mexico. It has to do with the way we think. It has to do with the principles and ideals which we support and believe in that made this the greatest, freest, most opportune nation upon the face of this earth. It is the reason why we were successful and the Mexicans were not. Why we were successful and the Canadians were not. It's the reason why out of all of the peoples of the world, this nation is the hardest to conquer and bring into a one-world government. Why this nation is the most difficult to disarm. It has to do with freedom. It has to do with the understanding of what freedom really is. It has to do with the knowledge that if you are not willing to die for freedom, you cannot and will not ever be free, because all your enemy must do is threaten your life and you will wimp into a bowl of quivering jelly. You will kiss his feet and do whatever the hell he wishes you to do if you are not willing to die for those principles and ideals that lead to freedom. It's not about finding loopholes in the tax code so you don't have to pay the income tax to get out of paying the money because you don't want to part with it. It's about the fact that the income tax is unconstitutionally and unlawfully being applied to the citizens of the several states when they are not required, nor is it anywhere in the law that they must do so unless they are participating in certain excisable activities, which causes them to create corporate gain called gross income under the law. That's what it's about. It's about the difference between right and wrong. It's about whether you have been intimidated and scared to death by tyrants, which makes you pay tribute to your masters, or whether you will be free and stand on your own two feet and say, no, not now, not ever, not ever will I do such a thing. And be willing to die for that stance. Because unless you're willing to take it, you are already enslaved, and there is no rescue, there is no hope, there is no help, not now, not ever. And I just use that as an example because most people nowadays seem to think only in terms of their pocketbook and nothing else. Most people whom I have met in my life that call themselves patriots are really not. They're looking for ways that they can get over on Big Brother and get a piece of the pie like all of the socialists are doing. They're hypocrites and liars. You will not find that here. Those of you who have been listening to this broadcast for many years know one thing. You know one thing, and you know it absolutely for certain. When you listen to this broadcast, you will hear the truth, or the closest that I can come to that truth. And if it turns out that I'm wrong, you will always hear me correct it and apologize to my listening audience, and I've done that many times. You also know that you have never, ever have to wonder where I stand on any issue. You don't have to wonder who I am, and you don't have to wonder if I'm going to change horses in midstream, because it will never, ever happen. Not ever. You don't have to wonder if the buffalo chip hits the fan, if I will be there with my rifle to fight on the side of freedom. I will be the first one there. And it won't be to fight for some scam like the Freeman were involved in. You better get one thing straight. I don't know why all of you listen to this broadcast, but I'm going to tell you this right now. If you don't have the courage of your convictions, go listen to Art Bell or Rush Limbaugh or anybody else but me. I don't want you to listen to me. I don't even want to know that you're out there. I want to talk to those people who need to hear my message and who have the courage of their convictions and are willing to die on behalf of their as yet unborn children for the principles and ideals upon which this nation was founded, that set people free for the first time in the history of the world, that allowed the slaves to be set free, that gave them status and citizenship and all of the rights enjoyed by anyone else. Not the pablum politically correct bullshit crap that they're being taught in their ghettos right now, that the Constitution doesn't protect them, doesn't apply to them, that they're not really citizens. Those are all lies. Every constitution of every state counts every human being born in that state, in the territorial boundaries of that state, as lawful and full citizens of the state of the union in which they are born. Doesn't matter their race, religion, place of ancestral origin, whether they have one leg and one arm, or whether they stand on their head when they eat breakfast, it doesn't matter. I need people to listen to this broadcast who understand that they are part of the militia, whether they want to be or not. That the goal is not revolution, but restoration, restoration, restoration. That only in a free nation that recognizes and follows the Ten Commandments given to Moses on Mount Sinai by God can ever hope to live in peace with each other. Whether you believe that Jesus Christ was God or not, you must practice the Decalogue, and especially His personal admonishment. His personal admonishment. And before you can do that, you must be able to love yourself. Listen to me carefully. Love thy neighbor as thyself. If you cannot love yourself, you cannot love your neighbor, and that is a sickness that permeates the world. People who have been taught that they are worthless and that they are nothing cannot love themselves and therefore cannot love anyone else. You must understand that that leads directly to the founder's understanding of what freedom really is and how it should be practiced. That you are free to do, to say, to worship, to engage in, to have trade, to interact, to build, to create, to grow anything that you wish, as long as you never injure the person or property of any other human being. They understood that, and they created a government, a union of states, called the United States of America, into whose hands they gave very limited and very specific powers. The states retained their sovereignty. The federal government has no jurisdiction within the territorial boundaries of any of the states, never have had. Unless they purchase a piece of property and the legislature of that state cedes jurisdiction to the federal government. In the state of Arizona, this has never occurred. The state of Arizona has retained jurisdiction over all public lands owned by the federal government within the state of Arizona. It means if you're a police officer and you take an oath to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States of America, you damn well better read it. Not just read it, understand it, memorize it, know it. and be willing to give your life in its defense. Otherwise, strip that uniform off your back and get the hell out. And the same for all of those in the military. That is the supreme law of the land. And that is your first obligation and duty above and beyond all others. And if you're one of those people who must be a police officer because you're insecure and the uniform and the gun gives you status and makes you feel like a man, get out and seek mental help. You are sick. And the same with anyone who fits that definition who happens to be in the military service. I want people listening to this broadcast who understand what it is that I'm talking about and are not playing silly, hypocritical, stupid games. Who understand and are willing to research and continue to gain understanding of the law, the real, true law, not the subversion that is being practiced today. And who are willing to stand and, if necessary, die in defense of that law, the real, true law. If you're not, your children playing child's games, and you had better leave the game before you get hurt. Listen to me carefully. You can't stand in defense of the law if you know, if you've done the research and you absolutely know that you are not made liable to file or pay the Marxist Communist Manifesto plank called the income tax. You cannot play games about it. You cannot say, I'm not going to pay the tax, so I'll file a return and put zero in the box. You cannot say the federal government has no jurisdiction within the territorial boundaries of the state and then watch and do nothing as United States Marshals carry off your neighbor. You must go to his defense. You must. If you know about it, go to his defense. And you must stand with a gun in his defense, and you must say no. You have no jurisdiction here. And you must be able to cite the law. And if you are a police officer or a police chief or a sheriff's deputy, you must stand in defense and in support of the Constitution of your state, the Constitution for the United States of America, and you must protect the citizens within your personal jurisdiction when a foreign nation attacks them. Why would you allow United States Marshals or Internal Revenue Service agents to come and strip a family of their property and haul off their children? Why would you do that when you know they have no jurisdiction in your jurisdiction? And to allow them to do that is exactly the same as allowing the army of Cuba to come and do exactly the same thing. I know why some of you do it. It's politically expedient. You might wish to work for a federal agency someday. Or if you stand up and do the right thing, you might lose your little job. Or if you've been with the department for X number of years and you only have 2 more years to go until retirement, you might lose your retirement. Let me ask you this, Mr. Brainchild, or Ms. Brainchild. What good would it do for you to keep your retirement if you leave freedom in the hands of an enemy. And if that enemy rips it to shreds and eventually, just a few years down the road, enslaves you and your family and your children and their children and your great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren live in slavery for the rest of their lives. Can you be bought so cheap? Are you really that worthless? I'm not. You couldn't give me all the money in the world to betray my posterity. I would not and will not ever do it. How can you do it? And for what? For what? Why would you sell yourself, your children and their children, your neighbors, and your country so cheaply? Why would any of you do it? Do you really think that by staying off of someone's list, you're going to escape the consequences of the future if you do not stand and make sure that that future is good? What would it take to make you stand up and be counted? What has to happen to you before you get it through your thick head that you will not ever escape the consequences of sitting on the fence or hiding? All these survivalists make me sick. They make me ill, literally. They're all stocking up to go out and hide in the woods until the conflict is all over so they can survive. What do they think they're going to come back to? If those of us who are willing to stand in defense of all of the cowards who will flee don't win. And how long is it going to take all of you to understand that if we all stood up together and said, no, get back in your cage, you can't fool us any longer, we know what the law is, we know who you are, we know what you're trying to do, we know that you are in subversion, executing treason, and it's over. And ladies and gentlemen, what would it take to make you understand that if we all did that in concert, it would really be over? And no one would be injured, not even with a tiny scratch. Because they're cowards. They wouldn't even think of attempting to overcome a whole people who stood together. But you see, I know that won't happen. I know human nature, and I have studied history well. Most people are cowards, have always been cowards, will always be cowards, and they will hide and whimper and wail and gnash their teeth and cry, waiting for those of us who are not cowards to do something on their behalf. And we will, as we have always done throughout the history of the world, we will. But let me ask you this. In light of that, why will we? Why have we? And what are you going to do to us when it's all over? Because that always happens too. You see, the vast herd of cowards become shamed and we become the symbol of their disgrace. and then they must get rid of us. That has also happened throughout history. And somebody that nobody ever heard of usually mounts up and takes control of the government. You don't believe me? Read history. Real history. Read it, study it. Understand it. I'll tell you why we do it. Because we have a spiritual motivation that most of you cannot and will not ever understand. We do it out of love. We do it for our children and your children and all of the future generations of the world, which we refer to as our posterity. And we really don't give a damn. What happens to us? Just as all of you get mired down in little bits of rumor and disinformation and lies that are passed throughout the so-called patriot community, hand to hand, mouth to mouth, I take all of those things and sift through them, find the lies and the deception, the disinformation, and cast them out and put together the pieces of the puzzle that give me the whole picture. I am fighting for a higher cause. I know that someday I will stand before God. And God will judge me. And all that I hope for in this entire world is that when it happens, He will not have to say anything, bad or good, just smile. And if that happens, I will be enthralled throughout eternity. I will have such joy within my soul that you cannot even imagine. Just a little smile, that's all I want. I would like to be able to look down and see that my children are living free, without fear, with opportunity to create and make of their lives what they will, according to their own abilities. I would like to see them smile at police officers instead of become afraid when they see one, like people are today. I would like to see the law in place, the real law. I would like to see it enforced and obeyed. I would like to see all of the traitors rounded up and taken somewhere and put on some island where they can have their utopian government there amongst themselves with all the liars and deceivers and manipulators and thieves all there so that they can really learn what their type of world would and will be if they have their way. That's what I want. And I don't want people to call me on this broadcast and try to stroke me or make me feel good because they didn't pay their income tax. I don't care if you pay it, if you're honest about it, and if you believe that you should pay it, and you can cite me the law that says that you should pay it, and that you're committed to that type of government, and you have the balls to stand up and defend it. I would respect you, even though you might be my enemy. But I do not respect people on my own side or who profess to be on my side who are liars and hypocrites and who are, most of all, deceiving themselves and think that they're going to deceive me in the process. It's not necessary that you deceive me. If you have deceived yourself, you have accomplished the most difficult thing in the world. You should be extremely proud. You don't need to foist it on me. You're listening to WBCQ, Monticello, Maine, USA. This is the Hour of the Time, and I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, all I want, or all I have ever wanted you to be, is honest, committed, caring, loving, and understanding that there are those in this world who cannot love themselves, much less love you, and therefore will try to hurt you and me and our children and our world and those people we must oppose and fight. You cannot have peace, love, and understanding with those kinds of people, because to do it would mean your destruction. But we can have peace, love, and understanding amongst ourselves as long as you are telling yourself and me and everyone else the truth and are living that truth. And if you can't do it, I can't help you. So get out of my life. Get out of my audience. Go where you can belong and feel good. You will not feel good here. Folks, all I want to do is be of service to my hometown, to my family, to my friends, to Americans. I want to do the right thing no matter what. Not because it's politically correct, not because somebody else wants me to do it, but because it must be done and it's right. And I know that there can never be a future that is good for anyone if people are not free. People of all races, all religions, and all places of ancestral origin. And all of those people must be willing to give up something in order to allow everyone else to be free. If you cannot do that, then the future is doomed, and we are all doomed. Doomed to pain and suffering and enslavement and wars and muggings and disappointments and most of all fear. Fear. Fear is the worst thing that can descend upon any people. The street alone. You've got to learn this, ladies and gentlemen. You must learn it. You must learn it. You must take it in your heart. You must practice it. You must believe it. And you must make it true. And there's one other thing that many of you don't want to hear. You can't do that if you do not believe in a power superior to humankind. There must be a God. There is a God. And you must find God.
Not by picking alone is me, or I crawl through your baby.
You see, without God, man is God. Man can do anything, everything becomes subjective, and it will be the rule of the strongest over the weakest. It will be ruled by the laws of the jungle. So if there were no God, ladies and gentlemen, and I know that there is, we would have to create one. We would have to create one.
All right, good evening, everybody. It's Doyle here.
Hi, and I'm Pooh.
All right. We're going to open up the phone lines now if you'd like to call in. Excuse me. And ask any questions or comments or discuss stuff. Feel free to, Pooh.
The number is 520-333-4578. The lines are open.
All right, good job. Okay, you find your story. Okay, anyway. If you'd like to call in, it's 520-333-4578. We'll discuss what's on your mind. Or if you have any questions or anything, feel free to call. So, Pooh, what are you going to read to us?
I don't know. There's a lot of stories, so I have to pick one.
Okay, go ahead. I just got in a little bit ago, so let me get organized here. Okay. All right, anyway, I had some, excuse me, my throat's kind of scratchy. I had a couple of questions about, I guess, a week and a half ago about some connections people had outside antennas and whatnot for radio reception. I'll go ahead and address those now on the air for everybody. That way, if anybody else has the same questions, you'll know what I told them. It doesn't mean it's the perfect advice, it's just what I know works. If you're going to do outside audio antenna connections, make sure you get a really good, high-quality connector. Having gold, as you see advertised, isn't necessary, really, for outside connections and whatnot. It's good for inside on the back of equipment for oxidation purposes and whatnot. But on the outside, what you need to do is make sure that your strip and everything is done correctly. Oh. Okay. Just a second. You're on the air.
Yeah. Bill?
No, it's Doyle.
Oh, Doyle, your program is being jammed starting at 7 o'clock every evening. I don't know if you're aware of that or not.
7, what time? What time zone?
Pacific. You're being jammed through Voice of America?
Yeah. I guess that started a couple weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. They're coming on.
I noticed it about 3 nights ago.
Yeah, I guess it started a couple, 3 weeks ago with Voice of America.
So nobody's listening. You and I are talking to ourselves, right?
It's kind of funny because some nights it's really bad. I mean, no one is listening. And then other nights I get calls when we're off the air saying it was the second hour was clearer than it's been in a month.
Oh.
I mean, I don't...
I was listening to Republic today. I don't know if you ever listen to them.
No, I'm out and about all day.
Okay, they're on satellite and shortwave both,
mm-hmm.
and they also have been jammed on the 9475 frequency and the 9400 frequency through the Voice of America programming.
Hmm.
And they gave a number today for people to call up Voice of America in Washington, D.C., because the programming is only supposed to be broadcast for Central America. And
yeah. Yeah, it's a backblast from, that's a military term. I don't know what the actual term is, but the backblast from the antenna is what it is. It's just they're pushing out so much that it's the same. I think this one that's on us right now, walking on us, is going to Botswana or something.
South Africa.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I find it to be pretty interesting. I really think that maybe Bill is right, that this is just a desperation thing for them to shut up any voice.
Probably is. I mean, it's an arm of the government, the Voice of America.
Right. They are so desperate that anybody is going to get something other than the babble that they put on the TV. That it's almost like they have to quash it. I would hope that, I don't know.
Yeah, it's real unfortunate. I know that WBCQ is doing their best, to work things out. I gave out the number about, I don't know, a week and a half ago or so to Voice of America. It might have been 2 weeks ago, but I promised Randy Steele at WBCQ I wouldn't do that again, so. She just asked me not to, so.
Oh, okay. Where's your signal originating from?
Maine.
Huh?
Maine? Yeah.
Oh, I see.
The WBCQ?
Yes.
Yeah, it's out of Maine.
I see.
Yeah, it's a really good station, really good transmitter, good staff, everything. It's an excellent frequency too, actually.
Yeah, well, it's for the Voice of America, and it does not seem to be as strong as the old WWCR, at least where I'm at, unless maybe my antenna is different, I don't know.
Yeah, it just, because we've gotten really good reports from most all over the U.S.
Yeah.
I mean, we, you know, prior to when WBCQ first came up, you know, on the air, calling around to people at various states, and then feedback from listeners all over geographically. I mean, Canada and Idaho, Texas, Florida. It didn't matter where you pick. This is a really good, excellent signal. This is just a little stumbling block right now. We're going to get around it or over it or through it.
Right. I'll keep listening. So thanks for the excellent programming that I can get.
Yeah, okay, good.
Yep, good night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hi.
There you go. Anyway, what I was talking about prior to the call was connections on the antennas. If you have an external antenna set up to listen to shortwave and whatnot, what you need to do, again, like where I was at, was you need to make sure that when you prep the wire, it's done correctly as far as the length of stripping and whatnot for the type of wire you're using. One other thing you need to do is make sure your connector's really tight. One of the descriptions of the problems is a popping or in and out. That's usually an indication of loose fitting. And it's making and breaking connection is what the popping is, or static buildup. And then what you need to do, if it's an outside connection, you really need to make sure it's sealed properly. You can do that like gunking up a bunch of silicone on it if you want. You know, like aquarium-type silicone sealant. Or whatever means you want to use. There's small shrink tubing that I use for electronics where you can just use a match on it to shrink it down, actual wooden match, light it up and it shrinks down. That'll make a good tight connection. That should solve most of the problems out there. Make sure that a good idea is before you erect an outside type antenna, if you're going to run out, you know, a hard type antenna, not a wire, where it might be up on a mast or anything, check your connections before you raise the mast and all that. It'll save you a lot of heartache in case something's bad. Do it on the ground. Obviously, when it's laying down, before you stand it up in the air and mount it, whatever way you do it, check all your connections first. Just plug it into a receiver and make sure you've got good connections, that you're getting signal and whatnot, and you don't have any problems there. Because if you stand up a big old mast, you know, 2-3 mast sections at 10 foot apiece, plus an antenna on top of that, and do all the stuff, drill holes in the walls and run your wire and then hook it up, and find out that's the bad connection at the very top, you're gonna spend a lot of time taking it back down and have a lot of heartache. I've done it before, so I'm trying to relay experience to you. Test it on the ground, that's what we did here. Just plugged it in real quick, boom, we had signal. Okay, now throw it up. We knew everything was good from the top down. And then all we had to worry about was once we ran it through the wall into the room, into the listening area, and one of the rooms, then all we had to worry about was that one last connection. Everything was already isolated as far as troubleshooting goes. So if you do that, if you want to set up a hard-type external antenna, you shouldn't have any problem. Just be sure to seal it from the weather. If you get water up your coaxial-type cables, it causes a real problem. Real problem. Especially if it gets up in the shielding and whatnot. If it starts corroding inside the connection, you get like a shorting, like a crosstalk type deal. It'll cause a lot of problems. I think that was probably the issues with the couple people I talked to. It was just a loose connection or a faulty fitting after putting up the system. And for those of you who haven't done so yet, that'll save you some time later. How you doing, Pooh?
Nothing.
You ready? Okay, cool. Oh, by the way, the phone number is 520-333-4578 if you'd like to call in. Pooh is going to read it. Whoa, what was that?
What?
My headphones. I got a bunch of feedback all of a sudden. Anyway, Pooh's going to read us the story first, though. I told her she could. I don't want to let her read the story. Pooh, get over here so you can talk good. There you go.
Okay,
you ready?
Yeah. It's called Fun in the Snow. In the cold winter time, Oak Hill was a good place to have fun. It was a very fine hill to slide on after the snow came. And on Saturday, some children came to slide. Tom and Tim and Nancy were coming up one side of the hill with their sleds. They were coming from Oak Hill Farm. Up, up, up they climbed, all the way to the old oak tree at the top. Up the other side came some children from the city with their sleds. Peter and Joe, Jack and Ellen, and many others were coming to slide. They always said that Oak Hill was their hill because it was near the city. Tom and Tim and Nancy always said that it was their hill because it was on their father's farm. And all of them were right. Hello, hello, they all shouted as we met at the top. What a fine day to slide on our hill. One by one, the children jumped on their sleds. And one by one, they went sliding down the hill. Then they all walked up again, sliding down and walking up. A short, fast slide down, a long, slow walk up. By and by, Tim stopped sliding and started to make a snowman. I'll help you, called Tom. I'll help you too, called Peter. I'm tired of sliding. The three boys made a funny snowman with a big, big smile. Let's make a hat for him, said Tom, and he started to pick up more snow. But there, in the deep snow, he found an old round pan. Here is the old pan we lost when we ate dinner up here last fall. He said, see the holes? See the holes? No one can use it. I can use it, said Tim. I'll use it for a sled. He took the pan out of Tom's hands and sat down in it. Then swish, Tom went sliding down the hill in his funny round sled. The pan turned first one way, and then it turned another way. But all at once it turned over, and out went little Tim into some deep soft snow. I'm next, called the other children, as they ran to pull Tim out of the snow. One after another, they tried to slide in the old pan. One after another, they had to be pulled out of the soft snow. Sliding in the pan was more fun than sliding on the sleds. At last, Tom picked up the old pan and put it on the snowman's head. "It makes a fine hat," he said. "First it was a pan, next it was a sled, and now it is a hat for the snowman." Then the city children said goodbye and started down the hill. Tom and Tim and Nancy started down to the other side of the hill, to the farm. They all turned to wave at a last goodbye to the city children. They waved goodbye to the snowman, too. Soon there was no one on the hill, just the old oak tree was there, and the snowman with his hat and his smile, a funny round hat and a big, big smile. There's no more. It's the end.
The end. Okay, here we get a call. Tell me on the air.
You're on the air.
Hi, I'm calling from Fort Myers, Florida.
Uh-huh.
I just wanted to, I'm not sure what the topic is now because I lost communication. Am I talking loud enough?
Yeah, it looks to be pretty good right now. Thank you.
Okay. Well, anyways, the VOA thing, I went to their website and I saw that they have one of their transmitters is going from English to Africa.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering, what do you think, Doyle? Do you think if we had some people contact the FCC to complain that WDCQ signal is being walked over, that maybe they would do something about it? Because, you know, they seem to be spending a lot of time bothering micro-broadcasters and not enough time fixing the problems that they really have to be fixing. Do you think we do any good by contacting the FCC and telling them that there seems to be some kind of a violation here? Or no? What's your opinion on that?
My opinion?
Yeah.
Uh-oh. No, let me see. I'll keep this clean. I think it's well worth the effort, personally. I mean,
it's well worth the effort.
I think so. I don't see the problem with writing or calling the FCC
okay.
and saying, hey, you know, what's going on here?
Well, I figured, you know, since they're, you know, we're paying them, we may as well do something for us, you know, that is beneficial for a change.
Yeah, I agree.
100 number, I just want to give it out. 1-800-CALL-FCC. And it's that simple. And maybe, you know, they seem to respond best to, you know, listener complaints. That seems to get them going more than anything else. So, for any kind of interference or spurious broadcast or, you know,
yeah,
that kind of thing.
Yeah, they should jump right on it.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I would think. I mean, if you were illegally operating some little 10-watt ham thing out in your backyard, they'd sure hammer on you. But
right.
I don't know what they're going to do here. What was that? 1-800?
Sorry, it's 1-888. I was mistaken.
Okay.
1-888-CALL-FCC.
Oh, 1-888-CALL-FCC. Okay. I just want to make sure I had that clear.
1-888-225-5322.
Oh, okay.
The voice toll-free call. So, I don't know. I just kind of thought about that. And also, I kind of heard you talking about gold connectors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say that anybody who's micro-broadcasting, I just started experimenting with this, trying to broadcast tapes of the hour in the town of my community.
Mm-hmm.
Gold connectors for audio, if you run a tape deck into your audio inputs, they really help a lot. They're about $4 more.
Yeah.
For, you know, than it's just a regular unshielded cable.
Yeah.
But believe me, it really helps a lot. And it's well worth the $4.
Yeah, that's what I was stressing, like inside. You know, in between your components, gold is really good. It, you know, it lacks the oxidation.
Absolutely.
Of typical aluminum connectors. Most of your connectors for that type of cable are aluminum.
Right.
Or an anodized, like usually gold or something anodized, or chrome covered.
Right.
But yeah. Outside, it really doesn't serve that much of a purpose. You're better off just making sure that the connection is a good, solid one and sealing it properly. But internally, between components, especially RCA type jacks, banana plugs, you know, spade terminals,
right.
gold really pays off any of those type of interconnects.
You know, I used to see those cables at Radio Shack or wherever, you know, and I used to think it was just a gimmick, just to get you to spend more money, but apparently I just took a gamble and bought them, and it really, especially for, you know, if you're broadcasting long programs that are just talk, like, you know, hours at a time, it really helps a lot. So
yeah.
That's all I have to say. And
no, that's actually, you know, interconnects and speaker cables for really fine upper-end stereo systems. I'm talking like $75,000 speakers and whatnot.
Oh.
These interconnects will run you know, for 1 meter, a couple, you know, or a 1 or 2 meter interconnect between two components,
right,
can run up, you know, $3,000 and $4,000, and it's pure, I mean, pure silver, like, you know, 8 decimal points out, with gold injected at the atomic level during manufacture.
Okay.
Things like that. I mean, the actual wires, even actually flat, solid silver.
Wow.
Connections with gold and injected and rhodium and whatnot.
Good God.
To get the purest, unadulterated signal between components. You know, that's what they dump into the stuff. And then the way they design the cables with a lot of small elements and then twisted and spun and woven in certain patterns.
Uh-huh.
Different companies have practiced with these geometric patterns to get what they feel is the ideal transmission. You know, really clear, but hits the highs, hits the lows, hits everything real good. Fast response time as far as signal transmission.
Oh, because the velocity of the signal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they've got some really unique weaving patterns that they do with these small conductors, and when they weave them, go in every direction, all through it out at a very scientifically, you know, figured out and tested distance throughout the cable, and then terminated right at the right point, so that this distance is woven perfectly throughout its length to give the ultimate transmission.
Oh.
You know, so yeah, the stuff, it, you know, it all works, and it's especially inside, like you say, especially like RCA connections, gold really pays off.
Sure, yeah, and you have a lot of RF interference generated from Halpert and that kind of thing. So.
Yeah, and you know, there's real good RF blockers for the. It's another item. I should have covered that. They are really neat. They look like a copper type sleeve with like a magnetic liner. And you can
I haven't seen those. I was trying to use the Snap-on chokes, you know, the ferrite core ones.
Uh-huh.
Those help a little bit.
Yeah, they got really good RF blockers that are available from different firms. And one of them's, you know, they're called RF blockers, if you call them.
Uh-huh.
And these things, just, you clamp them on to cables in between components.
Okay.
And what that does is it gets rid of the RFI.
Oh, so
really,
right.
Substantially, yeah, right in line.
Okay.
You just clamp more on the outside of the cable. There's no cutting, nothing. It just goes on the outside and absorbs and reflects stuff to wipe out RFI or to really bring it down substantially. They work really well. And you can get, you know, 4 packs and 6 packs of them for $34. That's not a cheap investment, but it's something that, I mean, it doesn't wear out.
Right.
Ever. I mean, you just snap it on and leave it. You know, it doesn't.
Yeah. And can you get those from DigiKey, do you know?
I don't know from them. It's generally from the stereotype suppliers like Audio Advisor.
Oh, okay.
Look there. Audio Advisor kicks, but they got some good stuff. They got really good cleaners for contacts. Where you have contacts between components. Deoxid is a good one. Pro Gold is another good one. That, I mean, you can take any terminal on any component, spades, banana, whatever, you know, RCA jacks.
Okay.
Put this stuff on there. It just literally wipes out the oxidation, protects it. If there is any even small stuff you don't see that's there blocking, you know, I can imagine like a grease film on a connection. You can't see it, but it's there. And it's cheap stuff.
Pro Gold?
Pro Gold and Deoxit.
And
then I think it's hyphenated and Oxit.
Well, thanks a lot. I'll keep an eye out.
Yeah, Audio Advisor carries all those products. Or Audio Advisor, you can find them. If I had a catalog here in front of me, I'd give you the number, but I just don't.
Oh, I'll find them.
Yeah, but they're a good firm. They carry lots of stuff.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thanks for that information.
Hey, no problem.
Okay.
Hey, appreciate your call in. I really do. I think might as well call the FCC. It's an 800 call, and if it's to wage a quick comment about the reception or interference and whatnot.
Right.
I feel that with it being toll-free and not that long of a thing, you know, we're not writing a legal affidavit that's 110 pages long. I think it's well worth the try, at least.
Right.
You know, I don't know how far it's going to go.
Well,
it's a good idea. I think it really is.
What gets them going is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
FCC, that's when they start, you know, wondering, oh, we better do something.
Mm-hmm.
And I figure maybe they could take a break from, you know, tracking down the 10 milliwatt broadcasters.
Yeah.
You know, start handling the 50 kilowatt problem.
Exactly.
You know, international and worldwide.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you have people from Canada to Florida, I'm in Florida, you know, complaining about that they can't hear, you know, Bill's program because of another transmitter somewhere else.
Yeah.
Obviously a problem. You know?
Yeah, I agree with you.
So, I don't know. Well, thanks a lot, Doyle.
Hey, no problem. Thank you.
Have a good night.
All right, you too. Bye.
Bye.
All right, good job. Give him the number. Give him the number.
The number is 520-333-4578.
All right, good job.
And the lines are open.
All right, there you go. You find another one, Pooh.
I already found one.
Okay.
I know which one you want me to read.
Okay.
The little engine on Wally's surprise.
You pick. Anyway, that was a real good call, because there was a couple things that I hadn't even thought about mentioning for people that are doing micro-broadcasting or worried about the antennas, some of those products, like between connections and whatnot, like RFI blockers and deoxit and progold and whatnot. I hadn't even thought about that stuff. I'm glad that I called and gave out where to get an audio advisor, carry that stuff. It's a real good firm. I've bought stuff from them before, books and whatnot and hardware in the past. Long past, and it was really good stuff, good service, a good customer service department if you want to call them and ask questions and whatnot. And those are some more good components, especially for the micro broadcasters out there. It really helps to clean up if you can get these small, simple fixes, you know, that aren't band-aids, true fixes to problems as far as reception going back out. So,
thank you.
So that what it really enables you to do is on your micro broadcast stations wherever you're at, when you sound better, it sounds much more professional, you know. And so, getting rid of a few of these little ticks and qualms here and there will really help that out. Woo-hoo. Okay. If anybody, okay, I know what this is about. Anyway. Pooh, are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to do this next right here.
Okay.
Okay.
This one's called Molly's Surprise.
Make sure you talk that way. There you go.
This one's called Molly's Surprise.
Good job.
It was spring, and spring was the time for the children to bring out roller skates. Then they all put on their skates and went rolling along the walks. There was a new walk on Green Street, so the children who lived on that street had the very best place to skate. Up and down the street they skated in a long parade. Children came from other streets too, bringing their roller skates with them. From one end of the walk to the other, they skated laughing and shouting. The roller skates went buzzing past Molly's house. They buzzed past John's house and past Bobby's house. Mothers didn't care how much noise their children made with roller skates.
Mm-hmm.
Old Mr. Bell, who lived near the end of the street, didn't care. He liked to hear the children going by. The longer they skated, the better he liked it. He stood in his yard and smiled at I'm lost here.
There you go. Right there.
Where?
By your thumb.
Okay. Waved to them as they skated past. Sometimes he would call, "My, I wish I could skate on roller skates." No one but Mrs. Brown cared about the noise of the roller skates. Sometimes she liked it, but sometimes she didn't. She never liked to hear it while her baby was sleeping outdoors. Then she wished the children would be more quiet as they skated past her house. Sometimes she wished they would skate on some other street. Oh, what a noise the roller skates made as they rolled along the walk. Oh, what a noise... Wait.
Doing it fine. Don't worry.
Oh, what a noise the children made as they laughed and called to each other. They always walked Mrs. Brown's baby, and it always began to cry. What can be making that baby cry? Asked Molly one morning. Does he cry all the time, I wonder? I wonder too, said Jane. But not one of the children knew why the baby was crying. Every one of them went right on laughing and shouting. Soon, Molly said to Jane, I don't want that baby to cry any longer. Maybe he will be quiet if I take him riding. I see Mrs. Brown out in the yard now. I'll go ask her. So Molly stopped at Mrs. Brown's house and asked, "May I take the baby riding?" "Thank you, Molly," said Mrs. Brown. "This is the time for my baby to sleep. But when you skate past, he wakes up. I know you don't mean to wake him, but I wondered if you children could be more quiet with your roller skates." "We will try to keep quiet," said Molly. Suddenly, she smiled. And then she said, "Oh, Mrs. Brown, I've thought of a way to keep the children quiet," she said. She said something to Mrs. Brown, but the other children couldn't hear a word, so they wondered what she had told her. Mrs. Brown laughed when she heard that Molly was going to do. "That will be fine, Molly," she said. "If you do that, my baby can sleep while the children skate." Molly said, "We won't tell the others. I'll save it for a surprise tomorrow." Next day, when the children came out to skate, they had a big surprise. Near the corner of Mrs. Brown's yard stood a large white sign. There it stood right by the sidewalk, and painted on it were some words in large black letters. The children stopped and read the words, "Quiet, baby sleeping, please detour. Our roller skates wake the baby up," said Molly. "So we must detour and go another way while the baby is sleeping. We can skate on the old sidewalks." "Good," cried Jane. "Let's see who can skate over the bumpity walks without falling down. It will be a new game." Then they turned down another street. "Now," said Molly, "our roller skates will go bumpity bump. That is the way cars go on a detour. Let's call our game the Bumpity Bump Detour Game." The end.
All right. Good job, Pooh. Now, what do you say?
And the number is 520-333-4578.
There you go. Good job.
And the lines are open.
Wow, that was a good story, Pooh. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyway, another thing I just thought of, someone had asked me about, there are ground blocks. I know I've covered this in the past, but another question. Ground blocks for your transmission signals. Make sure that the impedance of your ground block, you know, like the ohms rating, matches your cable. Otherwise, you're defeating the purpose of one or the other as far as your transmission or reception strength. And when you do the ground block, I say make sure that you run the wire properly to the ground rod. And when I say that, I mean stripping it where it needs to make connections and making sure your ground rod is in all the way. If you can't get the ground rod in because of soil or location, you can, as far as straight down in, 4 feet, 8 feet, 12 feet. One of the other ways that's sometimes allowed, as far as if it's a big industrial application, you need to get approvals, supposedly. But as far as in your home, you can dig a trench and bury the whole ground rod. That also works. And if you have to run multiple ground rods to protect your equipment, just make sure they're spaced apart. Don't hammer in side by side because it defeats the purpose. The ground can only handle so much at a time as far as the protection aspect of the grounding system. So if you space them apart, you know, I've heard anywhere from 5 to 12 feet recommended, depending on where you go, what industry it is, who teaches you, what you read. I would think 12 feet's pretty big. I mean, that's like major EMP pulses. It's kind of like a military standard. But 5 feet I've heard quite often to space out your ground rods. So if you have to run 2 or 3 of them to get, you know, 4, 8, 12 feet, let's say, of protection, space them out. Don't pile them right on top, right side by side and hammer them all in, because it's going to defeat the purpose of it. And once you run the ground, your common ground, let's say, from your ground block or your equipment to the first rod, You can daisy chain them, just wire them in series from that point on, from one rod to the next. You don't need to run wires from all your grounding systems all to your equipment. Just get it to one and then daisy chain them and make sure they're all connected together. Really good, real good tight clamps and whatnot. And one thing to beware of is a lot of the ground rods are copper covered, is all like a penny. They're clad. And that is acceptable in some industries. The best, if you can get a good pure copper rod, you're much better off as far as communications go. Some industries, it really doesn't matter. But the copper clad, like nickel or steel rods, are acceptable in many of the building trades. So that may be all you can find. But just beware that there is a price differential there between pure copper rods and clad ones. And also the hardness of them. How much abuse they're going to take when you're putting them in the ground. And then, theoretically, in the end, the conductivity. Which I can see where the copper cladding is just a basically a corrosion protectant to the steel rod doing all the work. Go with pure copper if you can find it. You can go to the hardware store and get these rods or Radio Shack and whatnot. And just tell them, hey, you know, what is this made of? Because some people will try to sell you. It'll say copper grounding rod, $8.99. It's copper clad, worse than our pennies are. So, anyway, I think that was the last thing that people brought up that I thought would be of more of a broader help and less acute type problems. You know, I hear different things from people, but they're very acute type situations with the way they have their stuff arranged or whatnot. So we don't often talk about those, you know, or maybe they got a bad radio or whatnot. Okay. Where's Shampoo? Oh, okay, yes. I have a request. Because WBCQ is a shortwave international station, and our broadcast is international, we need people outside the U.S. to call the FCC. The 800 number's not going to work for that. So if we could, I have the number. I just don't have it here in front of me. I have it in my logbooks for the FCC. If someone happens to know the FCC number, the regular toll number, to call, it'd be helpful if you call in and let me know so we can announce it for people in the international audience outside the U.S. boundaries to use, because it is an international broadcast. So people from the other countries need a number other than an 800 number to use. So if you have that, please call. We'd really appreciate it if I don't have it right in front of me.
And if you don't have the number to call in over here, just go 520-333-4578. The lines are open.
Good job. Woo! You might as well take over. Anyway, so what'd you do today, Pooh?
Let's see. Well, me and Allison played for a little bit, and we cleaned up the tapes, and we watched some movies with our mom and our dad.
Nice.
And we went outside to ride our bikes.
What about the snow?
Oh, yeah. This morning we tried to make a snowman, but there wasn't enough snow, so we didn't. We just had a snowball fight.
Oh, good.
And I also had to wear my socks, four socks on each hand.
Four socks?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That way she could have gloves, because she didn't have any gloves.
She couldn't find them? Yeah. That's good. That's a good improvisation right there. Yeah, it got very cold yesterday, huh? Plenty cold for me. How much snow do you think we had up here?
A little bit.
A little bit? Yeah. That's what I'd say, a little bit. But it was blowing all over. That was the problem, huh? The wind was bad. It blew up against the doors, and it would blow all over you when you went outside.
Yeah.
It was going sideways. It wasn't falling down. Anyway. I hear something over there, so I was saying if you could check on that for me. Thanks. Anyway, if anybody's got any more questions, just direct them to me as far as reception. If you have a micro-broadcasting station, you might be having some problems. I helped a few people out over the phone. It was real quick with what I could do with my training and experience from the military and civilian both. Most of them are really quick fixes, so don't get discouraged and think something's broken. It's usually something really simple, and it's just a matter of looking at it with a different set of eyes to find the problem. Oh, you're back already?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
thought I heard a car outside. That's why I asked you.
Nope, no car.
Okay, cool. We're talking about the snow and the... No, Pooh, you done with the snow story?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, God, my phone's killing me. We're not getting calls.
Can we take over?
Yeah. It's killing me. So sad. It's been cold all
day. Okay. Phil's been working all day out in the snow and the cold, so he's going to go rest his throat. And in the meantime, I'm back. Number's 520-333-4578. You want to stay, Pooh? Jump on up there.
Okay.
You can help me do the rest of the broadcast. The number is 520-333-4578 if you'd like to call in. The cultural elite, ladies and gentlemen, of the so-called New World Order absolutely recognizes the futility of trying to change people who are set in their ways. You see, this is a generational thing. It's called gradualism. So at the same time, they are patient enough to mold society over a long period of time by capturing the very tender minds and souls of our children through education, through organizations like the Humanist Marxist National Education Association, the Teachers Union, to which most of the teachers of your children belong. A puppet of socialist experimentation by the name of Adolf Hitler, who was a socialist. He was a Nazi. National Socialist German Workers' Party. Spoke of this in November of 1933 when he said, and I quote, "When an opponent declares, 'I will not come over to your side,' I calmly say, 'Your child belongs to us already. What are you? What are you? You will pass on. Your descendants, however, now stand in the new camp. In a short time, they will know nothing else but this new community,'" end quote. The new community that Hillary Clinton speaks of as the the village. Now, this belief was echoed, ladies and gentlemen, by an article in the official journal of the American Humanist Association. The American Humanist Association. In 1983, where the writer declared, quote, quoting directly, listen to me carefully, "I am convinced that the battle for humankind's future must be waged and won in the public school classroom by teachers who correctly view their role as the proselytizers of a new faith. The classroom must end. The classroom must and will become an arena of conflict between the old and the new. The rotting corpse of Christianity, together with all its adjacent evils and misery, and the new faith of humanism," end quote. Humanism, together with Marxism and cooperative federalism, is destroying this nation from within. That's why my children do not go to public school. I know that there may be some public school teachers. In fact, I know of one, absolutely, in this valley, who are attempting to teach the children the right lessons, but the rest are not. They are preaching Marxism. They are preaching the New World Order. They are preaching globalism. They are preaching anti-Christianity, anti-Judaism, anti-fundamentalism, anti-everything that might be in opposition to totalitarian socialist world government. They are subversives. They are liars. They are deceivers. They are manipulators, and we are paying them. They belong, every single one of them, to the National Education Association. And unless we get rid of them, the minds of our children are forfeit. How many of you know that your children watch television every day in school? A school-sanctioned television program called Channel 1. How many of you have ever gone down and sat in the classroom when Channel 1 was being viewed by the students and actually watched it? How many of you know where it came from? Who funds it? What is being put into the minds of your children through this television program? Nationwide, almost every school, Channel 1. You will not find it by going through the channels on your home television set. In fact, if you're a parent, you had to approve it. And you know how you approved it? By not signing a piece of paper. That's true. So you thought if you signed it, it would give permission for your child to watch Channel 1. So you didn't sign it because you didn't really read it. You're used to signing permission. This particular permission slip, which must be given to all parents, says that if you fail to sign it, you have given permission for your child to watch Channel 1 every day while they are in school. You see, you didn't read it. You saw Channel 1, blah, 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 so you didn't sign it, and you thought that that would take care of the matter, and your child would not be watching it. Wrong. You stupid sheeple, you didn't read it. Again. You're in such a hurry that your children don't mean enough to you to read what they bring home from school. And so you threw it in the trash, and your children are watching Channel 1 every day. Every day. As a part of their regular school activities, and you have no idea what is being put into your children's minds while they watch this brainwashing activity, and that's exactly what it is. The number is 520-333-4578. You're listening to The Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. What you got there, babe? Come on up here. I'm so proud of Pooh tonight. She's just, you know, one of these days we will turn this broadcast over to her. I don't know when that's going to happen, but someday it will happen. When she's ready, and she's learned enough, and she feels confident enough, this will be her broadcast. And she will be talking to the youth of the world, because the future belongs to her, and it belongs to them. I'm 54 years old. I could possibly live another 30 years. Maybe 35. But I've lived most of my life now. And she has her entire whole life to live in front of her. And so that's going to be very interesting. At least I think so. What do you think about that?
Pretty good.
Pretty good what?
I don't know.
You don't know? Mm-hmm. What do you think about taking over this broadcast?
I think it would be fun.
You think it would be fun?
Yeah.
Would you like it?
Yeah.
You looking forward to it?
Yeah.
You've always known that, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
And do you remember the first time that you said the Pledge of Allegiance on this program?
No.
No, you don't. Because you were only 3 years old. That was a long time ago. That was 5 years ago. My dearest darling little princess. 5 years ago. Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
You've been doing the Pledge of Allegiance for this broadcast for 5 years. And you started when you were three. You remember when we did the broadcast on the birth of your sister?
Yeah.
What did you think about that?
It was fun. A lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
Yeah.
What do you think about your sister now that she's 3 years later?
Oh, she's a lot of fun, too.
A lot of fun?
Yeah.
What else?
Sometimes she gets in trouble sometimes, but a lot of times she's out of her room and playing.
Yeah.
And she likes to scream a lot and cry and whine.
Oh, boy, does she ever. You didn't do all those things. You never screamed and you didn't cry much, only when you were hurt. And you whined a little bit, but not much. But Allison, she's totally different, isn't she?
Yeah.
And she's really very vocal, huh?
Yeah.
We all know when she wants something, don't we?
Yeah.
And we all know when she's not happy, don't we?
Yeah, that's right.
That's right, for sure. Okay, I want you, here's a lesson for tonight that you've got to learn on the radio. Don't say yeah anymore.
Okay.
Okay? And don't say, and you know how you learn not to do that?
No.
Give you a little clue. Don't say yeah ever again. Say yes.
Oh, okay.
And if you say yes, whenever you would have normally said yeah, you'll pretty soon you'll stop saying yeah and you'll say yes, and then it will sound so much better.
Oh.
Does that help?
Yes.
Hey, all right. That's great. Okay. Well, I guess nobody else is going to call, and this is during the Voice of America type baloney. So what we'll do is we'll just get on out of here, just as we always do when people decide that they're not going to participate in this broadcast. We hit the road, Jack, so that's what we're going to do right now. Good night, folks. God bless each and every single one of you. Say goodnight.
Goodnight.
Something blown by